Welcome back, everybody, to the Nerdcore Podcast. The podcast reviews movies and talks that nerd shit. This is another review today, and as always, it is the Nerd Chicano here alongside my wonderful co-host for today, Mr. Alex Flores.
I am the designated replacer of white boys.
Yup, that's right. And today we're going to let the spice flow as we review Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 2. And we're really excited for that, man. We're here to talk about Dune Part 2 with you guys because I was tired of waiting for Brad to watch it. And what's it called? Let me call up Alex here. And he said, I'm going to replace that white boy for today. And I'm going to go ahead and do this review with you. So before we can get into the review, Alex, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. As I showed you in our private conversations, I went Walmart hunting and I picked up the Al Yankovic story on Steelbook.
Hell yeah.
From Shout Studios. I had been waiting for this one because I had heard they were going to put out in 4K. So when they did, I was like, I really wish Shout did a Steelbook. And then they're like, oh, hey, if y'all want a Steelbook, just wait another month or two. And it's like, y'all had me there. Yep. Y'all had me worried.
Yeah, I believe Umbrella Entertainment had done like a whole like special edition for it and everything. And people were going for it. And I'm like, just wait. There's going to be a company here in the U.S. that's going to pick it up. Lo and behold, Shout Studios came through with it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, no, I remember when Umbrella was doing the whole thing. And I was like, I don't want to pay import prices if I can find it. And I was like, I'm just going to give it a little bit of time. And then when Shout did it, I was like, there you go.
There you fucking go. Yeah. But you didn't go to work today?
No, today I had off.
Nice, nice. That's why we're able to sit down here. We're going to be talking about Dune Part 2. I'm going to go watch Godzilla X Kong today. And after we're done recording here, I'm heading out. I'm going to go have dinner and get to watch that. But I've just been really tired. Long day at work. But I'm excited that we finally get to talk about this movie on here because I've seen it twice now.
I still need it. I've been debating seeing it twice for the longest time. And I told a lot of people, I think my least favorite part of the experience was I wished Warner Brothers and Legendary did a double feature between the two.
Yeah.
And just sit down and watch part one and part two. It's just like one long epic. Oh, that would have been so much fucking fun.
Yeah, I know, dude. It really would have been. But of course, you guys can get this episode early before anybody else gets to watch it by signing up for the Patreon over at patreon.com/TheNerdCore. You get this episode at the $1 tier. It's going to go ahead and drop on Monday, April 1st. It's not an April Fool's joke, y'all. It actually will drop for the public on April 1st.
Nope, so, you ain't getting it.
You're not getting it. Yeah, but you can go and get the earlier version of this on patreon.com/nerdcore. But, of course,
the April Fool's joke will be my entire voiceover is dubbed over by an AI version of Brad.
Yeah. By an AI version of that, right? Oh my god, that would be so fucking funny. It'd be so funny.
Just my face and just like AI Brad.
AI Brad. I did watch the movie.
I really liked Denis Villeneuve's vision in Dune Part 2.
Yeah, or it should be the Donald Trump voice that we keep sending each other.
No, that was just awful.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Trumpas. Yeah. Once again, soy yo, el trompa. Oh, my God. But, I'm excited, man. So let's not waste any more time, man. I want to go into it. I've been trying to talk about this movie for a while now, and nobody, what's it called? Well, not nobody, but specifically the co-host I have has not watched it. So let's
busting
go ahead out, and get into it.
Busting out the Spice Division shirt.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Your little name tag is blocking a little bit of it, but at least you see Spice Division.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. But if you have not watched Dune Part 2 and you care about spoilers, you should probably get out of here. But if you don't care about spoilers or you've already seen the film, go ahead and stay. Either way, how it goes, this is your one and only spoiler warning. And it is, in effect, in a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Spoilers!
Bro, I thought it was going to do the noise, man. That's crazy. There you go. There you go.
What the fuck was spoiler! That?
It's a little sound bite of me laughing. Yeah. Come on, man.
I just I just hear the fucking laughing out of nowhere, and I'm like, what is going on?
What's going on? Yeah.
Are these voices in my head coming to me finally?
Yeah, bro. It is.
I was hoping they wouldn't sound like you.
It's like, why is it sounding like me? Why is it sounding like me?
Why does it sound like Raul, man? Why can't it just sound like, I don't know, fucking Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
I don't know why he was the first actor in my fucking head, but
yeah. So the synopsis reads, Paul Atreides unites with Chani and the Fremen while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Written and directed by Denis Villeneuve, and written by John Spates and Denis Villeneuve, based on the novel by Frank Herbert, starring Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walken, Lea Seydoux, Stellan Skarsgård, Charlotte Rampling, Sohelia Yacoub, Roger Yuan, Bob's, Jamis is not even in this movie that long. Oh, that's great. Okay. Yeah, Roger Yuan. And of course, shot by Greg Fraser, edited by Joe Walker. Music is done by Hans Zimmer. And it sits at 2 hours and 45 minutes. And on a budget of $190 million, it has made $581.6 million at the box office. Any day now, we should be getting that Dune Messiah announcement. Because
please, guys, please. Because I remember, I think I retweeted from Discussing Film that Dune is officially a $1 billion franchise.
Yeah, it's currently the highest grossing movie of 2024. But then again, there hasn't been much up. But yeah.
We're barely in fucking, like, what, March?
Yeah, we're barely
about in March. About to get to April?
Yeah.
The only thing I can see it dethroning it would probably be, like, Deadpool and Wolverine.
Probably. Yeah, but that's a given at this point.
That one's a given. That one's going to fucking make banger money.
Yeah. So, of course, I've seen it twice now, Alex. I saw
just
it
the once.
I watched the it one. The first time in Dolby Cinema.
Okay.
And then I watched it the second time in IMAX. And I have to say, man, I love this movie. This movie's fucking perfect. It is the epic that everybody says it is. And in points in there as well, it's very like very beautifully constructed with so much care and love for the source material. That to me, in my head, I'm like, I don't think there's anybody who could have made this but Denis Villeneuve at this point. I think he was the right person to have to helm this project. And it really shows with this movie. But what is your initial thoughts on Dune Part 2?
I think one of the things that like Denis really like set everybody up, even before the movie even came out, was he told everybody, look, sit through Dune Part 1. It's going to be a slow burn. It's a lot of world building that I'm trying to do here. It's all going to pay off in Dune Part 2. And holy fuck, does it pay off in Dune Part 2. Everything that he beautifully set up in terms of the lore, in terms of the philosophy presence in the original novel, everything that he really like just took his time to develop in Dune Part 1 all pays off in Part 2. And like you said, you know, it's beautifully crafted. He takes his time with everything. You don't feel like certain sequences are taking too long. You don't feel like certain themes are, you know, kind of not fleshed upon. If anything, he introduces a few new themes that he retroactively kind of does, given the fact that, like, he kind of takes it, and he mentions he takes, like, a different approach than Frank Herbert did. I'm sure we'll talk about it later on in the review. Frank Herbert crafted the story one way, and then we got Dune Messiah because of things that he felt were not understood in the first Dune book. And so Denis goes into Dune writing it already knowing that, and so he kind of shifts things to kind of essentially build towards his Dune Messiah.
Yeah. This has to be the single-handedly one of my favorite experiences in the theater. This is, I mean, like, when I'm telling you, I felt everything, the sound just going through my body, man. Like, oh my God. Like, the way that they craft this movie, from sound design to the score to cinematography, of course, Greg Fraser does an incredible job in the first movie. And I don't know how the hell you even top that, but he fucking does. He tops it with this one.
There were shots. I talked about it with people, and I've probably mentioned here on the pod. I think Dune Part 1 is cinematography porn, because I don't feel like there's a bad shot in that film.
Yeah.
I feel like you could grab any still from it and it be a work of fucking art. So going into Part 2, I was like, Greg, what are you really going to do that tops it? And the way that he just captures these epic sequences, it's like, oh, God damn it, you're just showing off at this point.
Yeah. it's so well made. And I've been telling my friends this. I've been telling everybody. One of my favorite scores of all time is the Interstellar score from Hans Zimmer. And for so long, I said, I don't think Hans is ever going to, like, you know, top that. He didn't top it with Dune Part 1. I think it's an amazing score. Dune Part 2 is my second favorite score of all time now. This tops what Interstellar did for me. This is his best work yet. Because, like, in Part 1, he has those, like, very, like, epic tracks, which really work. But in Part 2, he has these very soft themes that, like, make for some really beautiful, like, music, where it makes those moments with Chani and Paul even more, like, what's it called? Romantic and very beautiful to watch, because you have these very smooth and very beautifully crafted music from Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. So with that, and then, like, with Hans, the epic moments, like, he had some very epic sequences and, like, in musical moments in Dune Part 1. One of my favorite ones in Dune Part 1 is when the Atreides first land to Arrakis, mm-hmm. and you just hear those thunderous fucking bagpipes.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Holy shit, I love just that track, and I'm so mad it's not on the soundtrack, so you can't, like, stream it anywhere. You kind of have to hear it when you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
Because it's such a great fucking sequence. It's like, who makes the fucking bagpipes just, like, fucking grandiose but Hans Zimmer? But no, especially if you're, like, looking at Dune memes on Instagram, what's the one track that they keep using? They keep using Worm Ride. And that fucking piece is so good. Everything. Yeah. It just has that fucking chorus and just the tension of just Paul riding the Shai Halud. Yeah. Everything is just... And then, like, the tension that he brings into the pieces with Fade Rotha. Holy shit. Yeah. You feel that tension with Fade Rotha. You feel that presence, that tense nature that Fade brings to it.
Yeah. What'd you think about? So I'll break it up here. What'd you think about a returning cast?
The returning cast, I think everybody came into the roles a little bit more comfortable. So you really see, you know, I mean, as much as I would call Zendaya a returning cast, she's kind of just, like, fucking barely...
No, she's a new one.
Yeah, she's kind of just new compared to how much screen time she got in Dune Part 1. But yeah. She makes up for that lack of screen time in Dune Part 2. You really feel a lot of that presence. I think Timothy's Paul just really gets fleshed out in here. You already see that just the development of just this scared teenage boy to just this young adult, just singularly focused. He's ready when he needs to do. He knows what he needs to do. And everything just kind of gets bigger from there. What is it? Jessica
fully
Ferguson?
He embraces Muad'Dib, man.
Oh, yeah. He fully embraces that impassioned speech that he gives in front of the Fremen after he drinks the water of life. You just fucking, like, whoa.
It's like, that's going to be the clip at the Oscars.
That's going to be the fucking clip at the Oscars. No matter what the fuck it gets nominated for, you're just going to see just Timothy shouting at the Fremen. And it's like, oh, fuck. Jessica Ferguson as...
Oh, my God, man.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Bro.
Rebecca Ferguson as Jessica. Like, she took that role from Part 1 and she fucking ran with it in Part 2. Just the intensity that she brings this role. Just how scary she can absolutely feel. Just that... you really just see her take on that Reverend Mother role and just kind of get into the psyche of it. And just everything that she brings to that role is just insane. Javier Bardem as Stilgar. Probably one of the best performances in the movie, both intentionally and not.
Yeah. Well, yep. I agree with you. I think that that Bardem, of course, brings like his edge to it, but yeah. It's like unintentionally really funny as well. Like it's such a great role, and he does a great job with it.
But you see, I think the thing that makes it just so funny is because you're like, oh man, like this dude's just like a fanatic, but that's the thing that he does so well with it. He really plays up this idea of a religious fanatic that's obsessed with the idea of this prophecy.
Yeah. And then you have like, you know, people like Dave Bautista, Stellan Skarsgård. They already kind of established themselves in the first movie, so they just kind of play off of what they already had established. Like even Josh Brolin, like I can't say much about Josh Brolin that was any different in this one than
Part one. His gurney's pretty much the same thing. Raban, Dave Bautista's Raban is pretty much the same. Stellan Skarsgård's Baron Vladimir Harkonnen's just it's just the Baron.
But I think our new cast really does, like, they do great. Like, of course, you can talk about, like, you know, Austin Butler's Fate Rautha. You can do, what's it called, Florence Pugh's Princess Erlyne. But, like, even Lea Seydoux, bro, who's, like, in this movie for, like, what, 10 minutes?
Probably, yeah.
Probably. Does such a great job with her role as well. Hell, even freaking Christopher Walken, who has, like, probably, like, a total of, like, 15 minutes in this movie. Does a great job too.
I even was like thinking about it when like he was first cast. I was like, "What's how is Walken going to be as the Emperor?" And it's like, no, he actually brings a lot into it.
Yeah, yeah, he actually did a really good job. And like, of course, Butler is crazy as Rautha. I don't think I've ever seen anything with Butler. I think this was the first movie I've ever seen from him. He was in, so I was like really really impressed with Austin Butler in this movie. I think that he really gets into like the psyche of Fate Rautha, and he really like he plays that fucking psychopath like a little too well.
Yeah, no, because I saw him. I mean, I obviously saw him as Elvis, and this ain't Elvis. This is fucking just intensity dialed up to 10, and just the psyche that he brings into it. He brings almost this edge, especially like the duel towards the end. Just like when Paul tells him, may thy knife chip and shatter.
Yep.
And fucking just Fade looks at him like, oh, you little bitch. You just look at it like, what's the formalities, man? Let's just fucking fight. Because you just see that violent nature that he brings into it. That total psychopathic, just completely detached from decency.
Yeah. I think it's just great performances all around, bro. Like, dude, such a great job here. Like, even Zendaya, bro. Like, I knew that this would bring a different, you know, look from. I mean, that this would be a different film because what's it called? Zendaya was going to have more time. I knew that her presence in the book is very different from this film, and I'm really glad that Villeneuve did what he did with that character in this film because she kind of feels like the anchor of this movie. She feels like very grounded in this movie.
She serves pretty much as the anchor, as well as kind of our look into the idea that we're not supposed to look at Paul in this like epic light, to where we're slowly seeing Paul turn into something that he shouldn't, because that's essentially kind of what Dune and then eventually Dune Messiah is supposed to be, a cautionary tale of the messianic figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you really see it with Chani, because in the book, Chani is kind of just going along for the ride. She doesn't like it per se, but she does it out of the love for Paul. But in this one, you kind of really seen that love for Paul, but just that torn nature to her that she really doesn't like what she's seeing.
Well, yeah, you can tell like she loves Paul, but she despises Muad'Dib.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in these two, like. And the movie does a great job at picturing both. And that's why I think that, you know, double feature would have worked great, because part one is all Paul. Part one is just, it's completely Paul.
Part and one's then, Paul, and then two, you see the rise of Muad'Dib.
Yeah. And you really see in there where people are starting to like either follow him or they start to like look at him differently. And my God, man, they do such a great job with that. The visual effects are incredible, man. I mean, like $190 million can get you this, man. Like, and somehow some movies that are a little bit more than this cannot even get anything that's good, this good.
You got like fucking, I'm trying to remember what, I don't know why the first one that popped in my mind was Black Adam. Black Adam was fucking bloated at like over 200 million. I want to say maybe even 250. Yeah. It's fucking bloated. The budget was bloated, and you still have some really shoddy fucking CGI, like that fucking dive scene that just everyone's meme to death. That fucking shot of just like skinny Rock after he gives up the Black Adam powers, and you just see like big ass head and little tiny body. Like this is what over 200 million gets you to where Denis Villeneuve takes what he got, which was under 200, and creates something that was like, nah, dude, that has to be like 300.
Yep.
The fucking sandworm, the fucking Shai Hulud rides alone, and all those sequences with Shai Hulud, and all of that is just like, nah, dude, that couldn't have been this cheap. And I know some people would be like, it's $190 million. Like, that's still not
still
as much.
Does.
It's still not as much as some blockbusters go for.
No. Easily, some of these like Marvel movies are costing like $225 to $250, bro.
Or you've got like some of them even like, or especially like when you go into like Infinity War Endgame, both of them costing maybe like a total of like $500 to $600.
Yeah.
And to where you get this with $190 million? Fuck.
Looks fantastic, man. I really love the way this movie looks. And I love what they did with it. I think that the story just, it feels so epic. It's exactly like it also feels like this this change to the studio system and the theatrical, the theatrical market that we're seeing, where it really feels like we're kind of seeing a tide change here. And I think we truly are kind of at the cusp at the end of the superhero, film. And I think that we're kind of heading towards like these massive, what's it called? Sci-fi blockbusters like this, because I'm telling you, man, like this movie made like so much money, right? Expect Dune Messiah to make even more. I truly can see it happening.
And I feel like exactly what you said, the shifting of the studio system, especially kind of just this idea of what the blockbuster can be. Like, we're slowly shifting away. Not that I don't ever think that superhero comic book films are ever going to truly go away.
No. Especially but when they become the dominating
blockbuster.
No.
We're slowly going to see that fade away. I think once Marvel's done with this saga, James Gunn and DC are probably going to do what they do, and just trinkle out a couple movies. Yeah. But I think we're going to slowly see that fading. I think everyone's going to see. This just like really like lights a fire in everybody's ass. It's like there's just some blockbusters that I see, and it's like, because some people have this idea that, the blockbuster is supposed to be a popcorn flick. The blockbuster is supposed to be a popcorn flick. You're supposed to see big shit happen. But I'm like, no, I think something like this proves that like, you can make a blockbuster and still really tell a story. Or fuck, like, even look like at, you have Godzilla Kong coming out right now. New Empire. Look at what, like, Legendary's done with Godzilla, and then look at what Toho just did with Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah.
You have essentially what is a blockbuster film in Godzilla Minus One, but it's a fucking story. That shit made me cry. I left Godzilla Minus One saying a fucking kaiju movie made me cry.
Yeah. And like I'm telling you, like it balances spectacle and the actual narrative piece that's supposed to be very moving in here. And it balances it so well. It manages to really hone in on those themes. Because like one of the biggest complaints I saw from people from part one, it was like, well, it doesn't really pick up on those themes of like imperialism and what's it called? Messianic figure, what's it called? That's being kind of commentated on. It doesn't really pick up on that in part one. And like in part two, does it. Completely does it. And I'm telling you, man, like I truly believe that I would have sat for a 6.5-hour film of these two together.
Oh yeah, no, and I think the reason why the idea of the imperialism and the messianic figure doesn't happen until Dune Part 2 is because all of that is introduced through the eyes of the Fremen.
Yeah.
And Paul doesn't get with the Fremen until the end of Part 1. So if you kind of like sit through a double feature and you kind of ride the wave, you see where Paul adapts those ideas of the messianic figure not being necessarily the best thing. The imperialism of the great houses. And so I understand that maybe it wasn't present, but at the same time, it's like Denny said, you know, this is world building. I'm kind of just trying to create this world that we're in and just the pieces, introduce the pieces that will come into play later. It's kind of like a, let me set up the game and then you'll get to see it.
Yeah. But fantastic movie, man. It is my favorite movie of the year so far. It is quite honestly one of my favorite movies of all time. I cannot wait until I get this on physical. This is going to be the best physical release of 2024. Just you guys watch, because this was amazing in the theater. And I am 100% sure now that Denis is probably making it a, what's it called, a priority to include the IMAX, what's it called, the scenes in there. It is probably going to end up being the best physical release this year, man. I mean, this movie is epic. It is incredibly written, has some great cinematography and an amazing score. And I'm just, I went out of that second screening just like amazed again, but also just very hopeful of what like damn, like movies can be like this, like movies can be this epic. Like I had not left a movie like. I had not thought about a movie being as epic like that as like since like maybe like Return of the King to me, where I said like that really was like a last like massive epic. And this to me really does feel like that.
Yeah, no, this is probably, I mean, I think the word epic is thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
But this one really felt like an epic, like the scope of it. I mean, just look at some of the shots that Greg used. Just these huge, wide establishing shots just to kind of illustrate what's going on. Like, everything just feels big. Everything from the cast, the performances, the script, the score, the cinematography. Even
the Gedi Prime, bro. Like, it's being shot in infrared.
Yeah.
Like when have we... Like, something like that, which some people would think like, oh my God, it's so pretentious. It's like, it makes sense. It feels like this completely different world from like all these other planets that we're on.
Yeah, no, one of the points that I wanted to make earlier that I think I'm going to make now is that everyone coming into this is a fan. Mm-hmm. Denis Villeneuve is a fan of the books. Hans fucking fanboy. That's the whole reason. Like, if you've ever read. Nolan comes up to him, hey, so Tenet? And he's like, oh, buddy.
I'm doing Dune.
I got invited to do Dune. And he takes Dune. And he takes Dune because he's like, dude, it's one of my favorite things in the world. He's like, and they're offering me Dune. I have to go do Dune.
It's okay because, like, honestly, if that wouldn't have happened, we, you know, and like, I love the score from Tenet, but I love the Oppenheimer score even more. And I think that if that wouldn't have happened, Oppenheimer's score would have never happened.
Yeah, no, Ludwig's score on Oppenheimer is just
amazing.
You know, amazing. Just like this erratic, fucking anxiety inducing at times. Everything about Ludwig's Oppenheimer score was probably happening because of Hans's decision to, you know, I'm doing Dune.
Yeah. You want to have any final thoughts here before we do our final verdict here, Alex?
I think, and this is kind of what I tell everybody, because a lot of the times I'm a huge sci-fi fan, so I usually can't always recommend sci-fi movies for everybody, because I'm like, no, it's not everybody's thing. I think this is one of those films I'm like, you just at least have to sit down and experience once.
Yeah.
You know, because... Maybe you'll take away, I'm not a big sci-fi fan, but hey, that was pretty fucking good. Or you'll be like, that was one of my favorite cinematic experiences of all time. You're going to walk away with something.
Yeah. And this is one of those where I can say, like, it's in conversation where the sequel is better than the original. I loved I loved part one, and it was such a great experience for me. And what's it called? I think that this is better. I think this is better. And that's crazy because I am giving both movies a 10 out of 10. This is both a 10. It is my favorite movie of the year. And I don't think there's anything that can possibly top this. Just like when I watched Dune Part 1, I was like, I don't think anything's topping Dune Part 1. And I ended that year with Dune Part 1 being my favorite movie of that year. But Alex, what is your final verdict?
No, this is, 10 out of 10. I will watch. I already have it on. I already have the Steelbook pre-ordered.
Yeah.
I have the Steelbook pre-ordered.
It's sold out. It's sold out. I got money. It's sold out.
I got it on Groove from Universal.
Okay, cool. Okay, I'm going to check Groove.
Yeah. Last time I checked, they had it. So okay. You might want to double check.
I checked Walmart.
And, oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, Walmart was already sold out.
Yeah, no. So I got it on Groove. So
yeah.
You might want to double check Groove, but no. This is... I'm trying to think of the rest of the film slate that we have for this year. But yeah, no, I don't think anything can top this movie.
Yeah.
This is easily, one of my favorite movies of all time as well. And I know people are going to be like, well, it's recency bias. I was like, no, you don't understand how, as a sci-fi nerd, how important this movie is. Because, whether you're a sci-fi nerd of film like I am, a big Star Wars guy, or, a fan of novels, which I occasionally am, this is big. Like, after, I joke about it, the 1984 Dune, after the sci-fi television adaptation, this is our big budget Dune. And this is like a Dune served to us with love and care.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, this is going to be my favorite film of the year.
Yeah. No,
I don't think anything can top this.
Me neither, bro. I don't think that anything can top it. I think it's just masterfully done. And hats off to everybody and all the departments that worked on this, because it was just that damn good. And that concludes our review of Dune Part 2. As always, you can keep up to date with us on thenerdcore.com, Twitter @thenerdcore_, Instagram @thenerdcore, TikTok @thenerdcore, patreon.com/thenerdcore @the $1 tier. You get this episode early before anybody else gets to watch it on Monday at 12 p.m. Central Time. So you have a lot of days where you can listen to this early. And what's it called? I have recorded the ad, guys, but it's not fully finished yet. So once that's done, remember, you patrons will be getting all episodes ad-free. And, of course, there's a Discord link in the description below where you can talk to us. And, of course, you can talk to us in the comment section on YouTube. Please subscribe to the channel. Click the notification bell when you finish subscribing. And leave a like on the video, as all of that helps us out as well. And on the audio side of things, make sure that you go ahead and drop a 5-star review. And follow us on your favorite podcast app of choice. Also, make sure that you guys are, just make sure you're doing all that. It helps us out a lot. We want to thank our patrons. Without them, it's not possible. And, of course, our wonderful, wonderful producer, Shane, where you can find him at XSRK, and Thrifted IL, Prison City Vintage, all the wonderful stuff to help Shane and his business. He makes it all possible. Alex, you want to let them know where they can find you before we get out of here?
Where is it at? Here. There, on Twitter. It's right there all the time. Whether you see me here on those live streams, occasionally on High Flyer Radio, it's there.
Yeah. All right, man. And, of course, we thank you all so much for joining us. We'll catch you all on the next one. But for now, we're getting out of here. Bye, guys.